just one aspect of inequity, just food. Think about housing, shelter, and all the ways they play out too. But just food and the power of food to touch everything, to break down relationships between people, to separate and isolate, to make life hard. Just think about the magnitude of this that's right under our noses that we don't even see.
Welcome to the Problematic Podcast, a show that gives you the chance to be the hero in helping solve some of the world's largest problems. Find out which teams need your skills today at problematic.app. And now, here's your host, Sean Tierney.
So before we get into this conversation with Jeff, I just want to take a second and explain why the long radio silence here. So if you've been a longtime listener, then you'll notice it has been 9 months since I published a podcast episode. I promise you, it's not dead. The pod is very much alive. I've just been focused on other things. And essentially, I took my content producer hat off and put on my software developer hat, and I've been hard at work building the platform that I think we need in order to pull off this vision. And here's what that vision is. I believe that we have all the pieces, all the puzzle pieces, like you listening have a skill set that only you have. It is a culmination of experience, the natural, like nature, nurture. So it's this unique combination that only you could possibly have. And if we can ever just figure out how to coordinate people, so matching people up based on what they care about, where they are in the world, their availability, their skill set, all these variables, if we can ever get the right formulation and make it easy enough and make it so you can see what the results of your effort are, in other words, totally transparent, trace it all the way to the impact that your efforts have in the world, if we can ever make that super low friction, then I think we have all the people and all the resources necessary to solve pretty much every major world problem. It's just an imagination coordination issue at that point. So that's what I've been working to build. If you haven't been to the website in a while, go visit problematic.app. That's problematic, like a house attic, .app, and take a look. Just go see what's there now. Because what I've built is essentially a trading platform that underpins the entire effort. We have a project marketplace. You can sign up. You can monitor SDGs, problems, track all these things, events that are happening when they come to your city. So you basically create a profile, log your skill set, and then, you know, fill out these preferences of things that you care about. Specify the frequency that you want to be communicated with. So if you say, look, I only want one email a month from you guys, it will roll up all these notifications into a monthly email and it'll send it to you. If you want real-time information, great, it'll do that. If you want to receive a email per week, great, it'll do that. So it's basically on your terms. You set the frequency, you tell it what you care about. And this is how we start to connect people and have these meaningful collaborations amongst people. So I've been trying to jumpstart it. So I've been throwing events in Lisbon. We've been refining this concept. I kind of piloted this idea with poker chips and cap tables, and we did it in the room. And I've taken everything I learned from that and turned it into a software application. So I would love your feedback. If you haven't made a profile, please do so, because your feedback means a lot. It's how we iterate. It's how we make this better. But I'm super excited for these next events. I just announced our next events, April 15th and 22nd. So it's going to coincide with Earth Day. So this next pair, we have an ideathon on the 15th and a build-a-thon on the 22nd. And it's going to be themed around like Earth preservation type efforts. But if you're not in Lisbon, you can still participate. We always need customer feedback volunteers. So take a look at that. Just go to the events page on the site. And if it speaks to you, you can sign up for that. But even if it doesn't, go ahead and create a profile, because this is how I can start to send you projects that need your unique skill set. Okay. So with that, this is my conversation with Jeff. He's a really awesome guy. I apologize if it starts off a bit rocky. Like I said, I haven't had my podcast interviewer hat on in a while. So you'll probably see it's a little awkward in the beginning. I'm trying to get my feet again, remembering how to do interviews. But the intention here is to start doing these interviews again at about a monthly frequency. And I hope you appreciate them. So anyways, would love to hear your feedback on any of the new features in the app if you find it useful. And with that, here is my conversation with Jeff. All right. Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Problematic Podcast. I'm your host, Sean Tierney, and I am here today with Jeff Bowles. Jeff is executive chairman of Creighton Community Foundation, which is a nonprofit whose mission it is to foster connection amongst citizens, increase community vibrancy, and strengthen school-centered neighborhoods to improve life outcomes and opportunity attainment of all peoples. Jeff has a 30-plus year career spanning a number of IT leadership roles and is currently based in my hometown, Phoenix, Arizona. Welcome to the pod, Jeff.
Hey, Sean. Great to be here.
So we met many years ago through a very random connection. I don't know if you want to give a backstory, but like, how about you tell us what you do for Creighton Community Foundation?
Yeah. So, Sean, you and I met a number of years ago when I was doing industry analyst work in the IT space, and you were with a company called Jumpbox, and it was in the heydays of virtualization, right? Yep. So since then, you know, your familial connections and interests in education, everything else have kept us connected. And I left that career to start a nonprofit here in my own community, Creighton, which is a kind of geographical political abstraction over here in East Central Phoenix. Makes up a school district of about 6,000 kids or so and 9 schools. And you know, we spill over into surrounding neighborhoods, so it's about 15 square miles total. But we started this nonprofit work, this community work, to pull kids, families, people together into stronger relationships, which the academic research says is the most instrumental influence in a kid's life opportunity attainment and life outcome. Going back to Harvard Working Paper number 13 in 2015, they digested about 40 years of academic research and said, the one thing that made the most difference in a kid's outcome was one adult supportive relationship. But we're in this community that's pretty low income and suffers from a scarcity or a poverty of relationships and connections between people. I think that's just a kind of intrinsic aspect of poverty in many ways, because when you're particularly poor and struggling with, you know, staying in housing, displacement and mobility, lack of resources, you know, there's kind of a disincentivization to build strong relationships and have relationships around you. You can imagine a kid growing up like that, maybe versus your own childhood, depending on what your childhood was like. You probably had a set of strong protective relationships around you. But if you're growing up where you're bouncing between houses all the time and don't have any place you're connected at, and, you know, family might be a mess, you can imagine what your relationship landscape is like that. So often that creates communities where people lock themselves away and don't connect with each other. And that has a disproportionate effect from generation to generation and creates a bit of a cycle of poverty. It's a contributing factor anyway. So we work in that space, meet human needs, surround kids with relationships, build vibrant places. So.
Cool. All right. So let me pair it back and tell you what I understand of this initiative, and then maybe you can kind of clarify. But it, to me, it sounds like the kind of the overarching theme here is that community vibrancy, what you call community vibrancy, this idea of improving just overall outcomes, health, everything, it can be traced back to a few different root causes. And I noticed, like, I read through your pitch deck here, and that it seemed that like food insecurity is a pretty big issue. This idea that you just said with like strong adult relationships, can you just break down, like, what are the contributing factors that you see having done this work? Like, what are the drivers? If there are like maybe 3 or 4 main drivers of the problems that you encounter, what are those?
Well, Sean, let me talk about equity for a minute, because a lot of these things are pretty deeply tied to equity and kind of in Maslow's hierarchy of needs fashion, right? So there's a lot of basic things you need to live life. Those all contribute, and when you can meet those basic needs, those contribute to your vibrancy of place, your vibrancy of life, and your connections around you. You know, food, shelter, safety, these types of things. But let's take food as an example, because you see us working big time in food and hunger relief. We're moving, we're considered a distribution agency. We are not a food bank. We rely on food banks as one source of food, and we do a bunch of purchases and acquisitions, procurement to try to meet nutritional standards in our community. Because a lot of times what ends up in food bank is just scarce, just charitable stuff. For your international listeners, there's a huge difference between different country and governance structures around the world. Some societies, some governance, some countries recognize food as kind of a basic human right and try to do basic food support. Here in the U.S., it's largely a charitable project, but it means that we end up with a mishmash of food that comes through food banks charitably, and often you end up with a community that's food insecure, that's hungry, that's starving, that can't get enough nutrition or food, and you're handed out, you know, chips and Gatorade. So we kind of intermediate in that system. As a distribution agency, pulling in food, managing its nutritional profile, making sure families get, you know, complex carbohydrates, proteins, all this kind of stuff. But that's going to take us into a food equity conversation. Let me just give you, you know, a minute here on food equity and in a Maslow's hierarchy of needs fashion and paint a little picture of how that impacts your community life and your relationships around you. Why don't you imagine the last time you had food. You know, I make this pitch sometimes. Imagine the last time you sat down with somebody and had food together. When was that, Sean?
I think I had a lunch like 2 days ago.
Okay, about 48 hours ago. So, okay. And you even close your eyes and visualize this. And any listener, you know, you can kind of follow along here. And let me ask you, what was that food like? Was that food you wanted?
Yeah, it was delicious.
Did you have a choice in that food? Yeah. Did you?
Sure. Like,
pick off a menu?
We chose the restaurant, salad place. And yeah, it was good.
Was it nutritious?
It was. Yeah.
Did you feel like it was like nourishing your body and giving you something as part of this food experience?
Yeah. It's my favorite restaurant in Lisbon. So yeah, we chose it intentionally. Yeah.
Now, what happened in this interaction with food? You don't have to share your personal details or anything, but you were obviously eating with somebody, and did you like connect and maybe strengthen a relationship, network, something happened around food, right? And you had the personal interaction and relationship, right?
Yeah, I can tell you it was actually two different people. We have our next problematic event coming up. And so these are two local kind of community organizers, and I invited them to lunch. We met at Honest Greens, and yeah, we basically plotted out, you know, with our respective communities, what the overlap is, how we're going to cross promote it and all that. So yeah, they're definitely, it was a business lunch. Yeah.
Yeah, but that's great too, because you networked, you're building community. So now think about somebody that doesn't have any of that. And their experience with food. Yeah. You know, think about if you cannot get food and you're kind of struggling from meal to meal to figure out, you know, maybe you have family, figure out what goes on. Maybe you're skipping meals because you're trying to feed kids. You never have an occasion to get food that you really feel like has a purpose beyond just meeting your urgent hunger need right in that moment. And maybe it's, you know, the taquito or something from the Circle K. I mean, no offense to any listeners that that's their favorite food or anything, but maybe it's the bag of chips or whatever you can get hold of. And maybe you're even like pre-diabetic. Maybe you even know that this food is actually hurting you and killing you instead of doing something good for you. And now think about, you know, that experience with food. And you're probably, if you're in that situation, those are probably food experiences you're never connecting with anybody.
Yeah.
Now think about too, how that plays out in your family life. What if you don't have enough food to go around and you're kind of feeding kids, and every attempt at feeding is like an urgent quest for whatever you can get for kids to take care of them in that moment. Maybe they're even hungry some nights, and maybe because it's so urgent, responsive, and last minute, you know, you are like going through an hour, hour and a half every time you need to feed somebody to try to figure out how to make ends meet, or the box of leftover, you know, rice things or whatever. And you're trying to just fill this gap urgently from time to time.
Now, think about it. So it's very reactionary and nutrient deficient and just, but, yeah, but I think I see what you're getting at.
Yeah, I think really big picture here too. And what happens with birthday parties? What happens with celebrations, with things like holidays and, you know, whatever holidays you might celebrate, places where you form relationships and connect your identity and your culture, and you kind of live your life? Those are joyous moments, right? It sounds like you even had joy on this business luncheon 2 days ago.
Yeah.
about how that radiates throughout your life. And this is like food equity, food inequity here at play. And when it's in a very basic building block of life like this, think about the power of that inequity to radiate through every single aspect of your life and just essentially crush you.
Yeah.
Hunger is one of those things that we don't recognize very often, that we don't see around us. You know, and ironically, I remember in the early days of kind of, you know, going through thinking about my community and some of this work, I'd actually said to a dear friend who's a big supporter, and, you know, we shared the same mindset, that I would never work in food because it's chaotic. It seems like there's lots of energy there and lots of people thinking about this problem, lots of big food banks. Like, why would you invest more and work here? But I've really had my heart broken down over time through our kids in our community, because they show up and they say, hey, I've been hungry. I haven't had food. I want to do work that brings fresh food into our community when we, you know, work with those kids and activate them, because it's pervasive. I mean, they have a personal experience with it. I've had my heart broken down in this area. And when you really start recognizing this, this is like the silent thing that goes on in our communities. Just one aspect of inequity, just food. Think about housing and shelter and all the ways they play out too, but just food and the power of food to touch everything, to break down the relationships between people, to separate and isolate, to make life hard. Just think about the magnitude of this that's right under our noses that we don't even see. So hate to get too passionate on a soapbox. I went way over my minute goal, but sorry, I get started talking here and just kind of go on. And this is inequity. So this is one of the problem sets that we work in communities. It crushes vibrancy in our communities when you have unmet human needs like this, don't have good solutions. So we look for these needs, we address these needs in the course of building relationships around kids that give them better life opportunities. So maybe they aren't in the same spot where they're struggling with hunger when they're growing up.
So have you made any attempts to quantify what you think the effects of this are? I know it's kind of one of these squishy things, because how do you, you know, you could maybe go about quantifying the effect, like from a nutrient and, you know, health impacting aspect, but you're alluding to a lot of things around, you know, what are the ripple effects in terms of like what opportunity cost and what are you missing out on in terms of networking and, you know, joy and other, you know, other variables here that we're not taking into account. Have you made any attempt to try and kind of sum all this up and come up with like a total impact of this?
Oh, there's all kinds of tidbits, and we very often, you know, nutritional health, we're finally getting some recognition in kind of medical care, system of care channels in the U.S. I think globally, I can't speak to what perspectives have been historically, but, you know, we recognize that nutritional health is a social determinant of health that radiates throughout your life and shows up in all kinds of disease and chronic disease issues and indicators. So it's easy to pull data on diabetes prevalence. You know, we think we have about 35% of our served community, which is about 15,000 people in any given year, about 3,500 households down here. So households report $23,000 a year, by the way, that they're making as an annual income for a family of four when they come through our food line, just to give you a reference point. But see about 35% diabetes prevalence down here. We're actually doing some medical food box work because there's nothing specific to diabetic needs or pre-diabetes needs when you're food insecure. So those chips and Gatorade have a really bad impact if they show up in your life.
Right, so 35%, but what is that relative? Like, what is the base rate of like an average income, let's say, I don't know, $70,000 a year household?
Yeah, on diabetes prevalence?
Yeah.
I can't remember what the number, but it's down in the 10% range. But the interesting thing is that, you know, we also say all the time, and I can pull up that number here probably for you in just a minute, Sean. But
it doesn't need to be exact, but I'm just ballparking. We're talking like a 4X effect, it sounds like.
So, sub 10%. It's a disproportionate weight on the community for chronic disease. And that's just one. There's hypertension and cardiovascular disease. But nationally, we already say that 1 in 4 U.S. healthcare dollars go to diabetes care.
Yeah. Okay. So, all right. Well, yeah, no, this is something I actually hadn't thought of before. You know, for whatever reason, when I hear food, I tend to immediately think in terms of like caloric and like nutrient and what's the immediate health impact. But you're right. I never think of like those secondary, tertiary effects around, you know, access and joy and all that. So yeah, super interesting. Well, let me ask you. So typically in these interviews, we have kind of a structure we follow, talk about the problems that you're addressing and then scope. So it sounds like you've got in your district, you serve, I think you said 6,000 people. Was it?
We have about 100,000 households on an annual, on a year, we serve about 3,500 of those households are food insecure, about 15,000 individuals. So.
Okay. 15,000 individuals. And, but I mean, obviously this is the area that you serve in a city. I mean, how many people do you think, do you have any kind of, you know, back of the napkin math for like how many people are impacted by this globally, this concept of food insecurity and.
I'm 15 square miles in what city of Phoenix. I mean, there's a lot of less populated areas. We're in a dense area and we're in a very low income area, but there's 1500 square miles in the city of Phoenix, Sean.
Yeah.
So, I'm 1/100th of the city of Phoenix. And I think we serve about 65% of the most food insecure families by the USDA's classification in our 15 square mile community. But yeah, still, yeah, doesn't matter. Yeah. Scale that out by 100. That's a big problem just in the city of Phoenix, right? So now
that's one city in one country. I mean, I guess where I'm going with this is usually like the whole point of these interviews is we really try to like get an understanding of these problems. And then at the end, we conceive of things that we can do to help solve it locally for you, but then make that in such a way where it's repurposable. So it might be applied to the greater problems at large in other places.
Yeah. And you know, I think along those lines, Sean, let me just step back. It's not just hunger here, right? It's issues of the digital divide and inequity. The opportunity here for us and what we're doing, you know, we talk about the solution set here in a minute that we're pursuing, and it's really a communication solution set across the digital divide, and the opportunity is to ubiquitously cross the digital divide. Because the folks faced with the challenges are the ones that are often powerless to tackle it. Frontline human needs nonprofits. Think about us for a second. You know, we're this 15 square mile focused nonprofit, and this community that we're serving. You know, I've talked about this inequity and this displacement and some of these things. The families that we typically serve are serially, over and over again, digitally disconnected. You know, when you're at this point in your survival and you're struggling with just day-to-day survival, you're pretty untethered digitally and unconnected. And that also affects your access to resources. When I'm trying to reach people and make sure they get food at the end of the day, just reaching people, communicating, you know, you're working with a digital device that, you know, the SIM card's kind of disposable and it's pay as you go. And maybe the device itself is almost disposable depending on how your life is. You know, there's just a lot of chaos, and your access to data may be non-existent. You may not have the skill set. You know, maybe you've immigrated recently. Maybe you're in a foreign land, foreign language. You know, maybe most of what you have access to just isn't something that you do. We have lots of community members that just won't do anything with their even punching the button to clock in. For some of my employees who come from the community, won't get done on a phone. So there's a digital divide element here, and very often, you know, the corner McDonald's or somewhere. Somewhere that's not necessarily nutritious too, you know, might be tied to food inequity. Sorry, McDonald's. That might be your point of digital access and this kind of, you know, variable access to Wi-Fi hotspots and this kind of stuff, which is, you know, we're talking about communities where you don't even have civic institutions. Nobody advertises in our neighborhoods. You know, I'm talking about, you have a very clear divide in the middle of this community, where there's a specific street, Thomas Road, because you're from the area, Sean, there are no banks south of that. You know, south of Thomas Road, you're pretty much one distinct type of grocery store that's a lower end grocery store. You do not any longer have, you know, churches, civic institutions south of Thomas Road or really advertisement. So, you know, hotspots, Wi-Fi hotspots, this kind of stuff are pretty scarce. And yeah, so there's a huge digital divide here. And that's part of the challenge here because it's digital equity too, right? So, mm-hmm. you know, all these equity issues are tied together. And today the conversation is really going to be about digital equity and communication platforms for digital equity for marginalized peoples.
Right. Okay. So let me pair back something that I think is a key point here. So much like the food equity situation, you're saying where you, because you're suffering from this deficiency, it's almost like cyclical kind of negative spiral. Like you never are able to rise above it because you don't have the networking, yep. you don't have the joy, you don't have the sustenance and nutrition and whatnot. So it's like you're perpetually kind of kept down. It sounds like with the digital divide that you're talking about, because you don't have connectivity and a computer and access to be able to, you know, access these services and portals and whatnot to level up your situation, you're saying it's kind of this perpetual cycle where you're just kept down cheerily due to being starting on the wrong side of that divide. Is that kind of the yep. essence of it?
Yep. And let me take you like really big picture for a minute. You know, we talk about DAOs all the time now with Web3, and this is probably speaking to your audience, right? So, you know, that all seems like exciting, cutting edge stuff. But we've kind of chased the ideal or this dream of a DAO long before DAOs were maybe even possible, or at least not before they were trendy, in the context of kind of building up community empowerment and ownership and participative, you know, connections to things. We've worked through like volunteer buck drivers or driven participative economies and leadership ladders, advisory board structures that lead our overall foundation governance model. And there's lots of pieces there. So we've been thinking about this problem set about how do you build up the capacity of people and give them ownership in something for a long time. And now you have DAOs coming along, and DAO could formalize a lot of this, make it well-structured and readily deployable and massively sustainable and reduce overhead and human variability in the process. So just hypothetically asking, how do you do that with a non-digitally connected group of people across digital divides? I mean, this is where we need empowerment. This is the opportunity, man.
Yeah.
This is the exciting stuff for DAOs. I mean, we could sit around and geek out as, you know, empowered white guys here on the potential, but this is where it makes a difference. I mean, this is where it makes like a global difference. This is huge. But, the digital divide problem is everywhere. So how do we get across that barrier? And I think we're figuring out how to cross some of that with some of our messaging and communications platform. And that's what's so exciting here to me. That's why I'm talking to you with Problematic, is I'm like, wow, man, if we could put this on guide rails and get this going for nonprofit deployment over and over again for digital divided communities and like enable connection across the digital divide that could put up with variability and connection and messaging channels and integrate WhatsApp and maybe even connect into DAOs and tokens and, you know, oh man, that would be so empowering and cool. I mean, we could tackle a societal problem that's just bigger than I think anybody can imagine that's listening to this. It would be, yeah, so.
Yeah, well, okay, well, so we're jumping into the solutions realm of this, which is perfect. So let's make that transition now. So talk a little bit about how you are approaching this digital divide. You've kind of laid it out. You've said, okay, well, we can't just do like an average web portal that we're all used to for accessing services and participating here, because our constituents actually we can't assume that our constituents have computers. In fact, we can almost assume that they don't. So what has been your approach to solving that problem thus far?
Yeah. So we realized out the gate, you know, that we had to reach people with the tools that we had. And really here in the US, the standard is, you know, the phone and text messaging now. You know, nearly everybody's gone, dropped landlines, is on mobile now in the US, and SMS is pretty ubiquitous. I mean, I think there's other chat tools out there like WhatsApp and that type of stuff, but, you know, you don't necessarily have WhatsApp connected to your like identity. So if you're working with like public service partners, like school districts, like social service agencies, it's going to be a phone number. It's a common denominator at the end of the day. And we realized that we had to reach people, but we also had to like interactively connect them, like, you know, authentically connect them rather than just doing information push all the time, or else it just goes into the bit bucket when you have numbers change, this kind of stuff. You never get people reconnected. And we realized that we had to connect them in the most consistent, simplest way possible. So we set out and knew that we needed to do SMS communication, and we needed to have interactive SMS communication at massive scale, with a single number, with a single identity, with a single presence. So, and when we, we come at this from some political campaign organizing, I've done some of that kind of stuff too. And there's a lot of solutions out there that get pretty pricey and give you, short code messaging. Now that's kind of fallen by the wayside. It's all 10 digit here now because of regulatory requirements. But there's a bunch of solutions out there to do, keyword broadcast lists and this kind of stuff. What they end up doing is like fragmenting your efforts across a bunch of different platforms and end up giving you a limited tool set that don't really give you engagement with people. So what we needed was I've told you about food boxes today, but if you need something else, you need to be able to reach back to me and participate in nearly any service I have, whether it's providing your information to pick up a food box, whether it's setting up an appointment to get enrolled in food stamps, or whether you're in crisis mode and need some other sort of social service interaction or support, or if you just want to get notified about other volunteer events or events to be able to give back to your community, you need to have like one throat to choke, one number to go to for all of these services if I'm going to make a meaningful impact in your life. And we set out for building that kind of, integrated, low cost. It has to be something you can package up and operate within nonprofit margins, which was another thing for a lot of the SMS communication tools out there. You got somebody building their own thing and then charging the nonprofit for it. You're finally up to like 5 cents a message or something. And I'm doing English and Spanish communications, and we can talk about encoding and all that kind of stuff. But you start throwing the Spanish accent marks and everything on something, now suddenly you're in Unicode and you're beyond the 160 text limit and sending multi-part messages and getting charged 5 cents for each one. And you might send an announcement out for a food box. It's like, 50 cents if you're using some vendor out there, whereas you could do it for, a couple of cents if you can home grow this platform and get something deployable for a nonprofit. But the vendor marketplace also causes this fragmentation of solutions and very limited kind of one-way communication pipes. So what we were doing was this one unified service point that can communicate ubiquitously with our community. And hey, you lost your phone. Well, as long as you remembered our main number or can get somebody to search it up for you, you can resume that interaction with us, know how to reach us, know everything that's going on through us in your community, and stay relationally connected.
Okay, got it. And so practically walk me through how this works. Like, where do the first person, one of your constituents, how do they find out about you, and what's their first interaction? How do they get into this ecosystem with the SMS?
Yeah, so usually it's like referral and word of mouth these days. Initially, we work with school district partners, so very often we, know which families are like food insecure on, federal free lunch programs. And in the early days when COVID hit and everything locked down, suddenly all the pantries are closed. We collected those phone numbers as a mass referral from school districts, reached out and said, by text message and said, hey, we're running a food distribution over here. It's very chaotic, very responsive because everywhere was closed and suddenly nobody could get food anywhere if you were food insecure. And so we reached out that way, and then it's built this network over time that's now just kind of word of mouth referral. And somebody, you run into a neighbor who's struggling with food, and you're like, oh, text these people, 888-3770, and just text them with food. Just send the word food. And that shoots a message out. You say, oh, hey, we have a food box program. It's an autoresponder, and adds them to a broadcast message list so they get announcements about things. They show up at food distribution, and then they have a group coming through line collecting our data, and they're like, oh, hey, here's some other services that we do, text this number if you want this. But next week, we're going to ask you when you show up in line to text this keyword to our number, and then that text message is going to start collecting your information on household income, how many people, how many food boxes do you need this week? And the multi-step kind of survey data collector will run when they show up this next week for food stamps. They'll hear about SNAP and food stamps and this kind of stuff at the same time. And if they want to set an appointment and enroll in that, there's another messaging channel they can send a message to. And that starts another set of interactions. And ultimately, if they text us at the end of the day and none of those things are a match for any automated services, it goes through to our community health worker team, which is doing a lot of the food stamp enrollment, and they pick up an interactive session on the back end. So if you're misspelling something or whatever, and that goes for medical food boxes. If you're getting diabetes counseling over at St. Joe's because you've just been released from the hospital and they recognize you're food insecure, they'll give you a little card with our number on it, say text medical. And that'll start you getting set up with a medical food box and some interactive support and nutritional ed. So a little bit of a high level overview of kind of the use of that communication portal, but it's always one number
and different keywords to initiate a sequence based on food, medical, health, whatever the issues are. And okay, so I can see how that gets passed around. That's easier to, you have to remember one thing, you lose your phone, it's still okay because someone tells you the number. And
That's one number everywhere, Sean. So if you're calling me, if you're a donor, if you're calling me, you're calling me at that number. If you're, that's the number. So I will never publish a number besides that number anywhere, because it's important to have that one single identity in front of our community. That is the main point of contact. It's interactive. It's voice, it's call trees, it's everything behind that one number, which is part of the massive fun of integration, because that's kind of pushing the use case and the limits of some of this. And that's fun. Then you start thinking about some of the automated interactions, and that's fun. Then you start thinking about all the stuff you can collapse onto this number, and that's pretty fun too. You really need some intelligent kind of message routing in the messaging session for this one number. Yeah, all kinds of fun integration for us.
Well, let me ask you, what do you figure you guys have, what's the expanded circle enabled by doing it this way with SMS? Like had you done this as a web portal, you'd be only serving a subset of the people you currently do. Do you have any estimation as to what this has gotten you being able to use this lowest common denominator?
Yeah. If we couldn't have done first pass SMS broadcasting during COVID, I don't think we'd be doing hunger relief. I think there would have been, and that was, talk about 350 households on any given Saturday, minimally during the early days. And so that was, you're talking, and it's, often those food boxes go beyond 1 week. So you're talking about thousands of households and, 4.5 people on average right there. What would those folks have done for food during COVID?
Yeah,
I can't imagine. SMS has been integral. So we knew we had to reach out then. We didn't have any other, we would have had to verbally call people or something, I guess. I don't know what we would have done. And that was a massive scale of calling. So to call 1,000 people, we were 7 folks back then. So this was early days of COVID and, youth programs closing down. So yeah.
And okay. And you guys have cobbled together this on your own. Can you talk a little bit about, and we can kind of geek out here, but what is the tech stack? How did you make this thing? What are you using, and where does it stand?
Yeah. So, let me tell you about the tech stack. Let me tell you that kind of core parts of the tech stack too are really accessible, for small nonprofits. And I'm talking, let me just tie this into the digital divide once again. Like I said, this is about ubiquitously crossing the digital divide and making it possible for the folks facing the frontline challenges, small nonprofits that don't have tech staff to cross this digital divide and to reach and serve people and to meet human needs and to change things. I mean, there's a multitude of problems that can be tackled with this. That's what it's about at the end of the day. And we're not very far away, I think, because, standing up a PBX, a virtual PBX system these days, and a SIP trunk, maybe that's a little bit of a stretch if you've not done much tech. You probably find somebody to help you with that. There's probably people all around you. And it's not
The irony here, I'll jump in real quick. The irony here is Jumpbox, that company where we originally met through, we used to package the Asterisk PBX as a virtual appliance. And that may actually been how we got to know each other originally.
Yeah, so it's Asterisk. 3CX is what we're using. So we picked up 3CX, and I was actually annoyed pre-COVID. It was just ironic that all this was kind of in place, because I was annoyed with Grasshopper or somebody I was using as a virtual PBX. It was kind of all packaged out of the box and was a little bit expensive. Time to be done with this. So I think I picked up 3CX because they had hosted instances, and we tried to be nothing on-prem because we're habitually mobile. We operate out of 6 sites, and grassroots nonprofit, low income community. Hey, you kind of live life like the place is going to catch fire. We're highly mobile, so we're all cloud, all Google Workplace. So 3CX hosted instance, I could throw it in, and got a Twilio SIP front because we could integrate SMS messaging with Twilio and tie a messaging service to it. And that's not too much of a stretch to set up, and you're kind of there out the gate, you know, with that kind of back end to start doing some pretty cool stuff. And we initially went through and like, well, you know, how do we start doing some broadcast messages off of this thing, and you know, managing some broadcast lists because we had this community we needed to reach and say, hey, we need to upload this, you know, do this dump of phone numbers into a broadcast list and just send out food box announcements. We actually didn't have a place we did food distribution initially. Every week was different, so kind of like a MASH hospital, you know, mobile army search the hospital of food distribution. It's like, hey, where are we going this week? We're going to show up with a couple of trucks and a whole bunch of tables and volunteers. And yeah, oh, your parking lot's empty and you're not going to run us off. We're going to do it here. So it was a blast. We were just mobile and all around. So we had to reach people and tell them where this was or else they'd never find us. So being able to upload to a broadcast list just made sense. We started checking out Twilio, and they've got some nice programmable services around, you know, just broadcast list management. And then it became clear to us pretty soon that, hey, we had to keep this unified identity in our community, which required a little more fancy footwork. And Twilio has some interesting message routing features that they manifest through a graphical user interface right now, which is a studio flow. It's kind of drag and drop. Logic.
Yeah, I was looking at it. I was investigating it before a call. It looks really cool. It's like a no code kind of.
But it can also become wildly cumbersome too. So today we have all kinds of flows breaking out to different things in there. So we started out with broadcast and ended up running a bunch because we do over in agriculture, community gardens, all kinds of stuff, running all kinds of broadcast lists in there. And then one day it occurred to us, we're spending a lot of manual effort and maybe not reaching people the right way, just trying to collect some baseline data, and that we need a way to reach community to inform us and make decisions about other things kind of spontaneously when maybe they're not showing up at an event or showing up at a food box distribution. We still want your input. We want to know if this thing's valuable to you. We want to know if we can engage you or tell you about a new service. So we needed some other kind of automated but interactive messaging in here. So we started doing a little logic flow in there to do some data collection. And because of what we were playing with at the time, you know, it's not like we did a deep architectural dive. We just ended up on AWS Lambda with a function and dropping data into Dynamo. You know, Dynamo makes me absolutely nuts because, you know, the whole AWS cloud, you really have to be pretty, you know, pretty tech-centric, and so it makes it almost inaccessible to the rest of the staff. So we've got a whole bunch of front-end web pages we've custom built piece by piece over time, and like, man, this is highly inefficient here. We really need like a package solution for reporting and access. You know, you've since introduced me to Bubble, and I've got some really interesting thoughts manifesting around Bubble and kind of no-code things and interfaces to back-end data. I'm not even convinced Dynamo is the right place to be, but the Lambda function was pretty convenient to write at the time. Sometimes it's not responsive enough or scalable enough. But there's a whole bunch of messaging logic at the end of the day that happens in the Twilio kind of studio flow and with some Twilio functions that do some message routing over there, just JavaScript functions. And then they route out and maintain a message session to a Lambda instance when somebody's doing interactive data entry that collects data in a Dynamo backend. And that's kind of the net of it. At the end of the day, the studio flow handles broadcast and administrative sending of messages. Some of the default Twilio functionality handles stops and unsubscribes and that kind of stuff because it's kind of mandated. And then, you know, interactive data collection gets handed off to the AWS cloud. And, you know, as we've been having this conversation, I'm thinking about things. I think there's just real opportunity there to make things much more efficient, package up stuff that can be deployed, and kind of make this functionality out of the box and ready for people without all the complexity today, because like my survey questions are all in the Lambda function.
Yeah, so it's just like hard-coded stuff. It's not super easy to change, and it sounds like kind of a brittle. But I mean, the good thing is you've done a proof of concept, essentially. You've proven out that this does work. You can reach people. You can have not just this one-way street. You can have this interactive exchange, be able to pull people. And so, you've kind of proven the utility of it. And it sounds like now at this point, you guys are just need to kind of level up and get a more robust, like, drag and drop form that your staff can actually change and interact with. Cool. Assuming that the listeners, like, their eyes haven't glazed over at this point from all the tech we just discussed, because I don't know how technical my audience is. What can someone listening, like, what do you guys need? What is the, is that the barrier hitting at this point? It's literally just like, not being able, it's too technical to be able to, like, be able to change it and kind of roll with the punches and be nimble with it. Is that the main problem that you're hitting?
Yeah. And, you know, I think we could probably, you know, we can get in a spot where we can work with this, but I'd really like to package this in a way that, well, again, I'm a, you know, the place might burn down kind of guy. I have already shared that with you. And, you know, if everything blows up, if people start going out of business, how do I redeploy this stack somewhere else on a different platform? How much resiliency and recoverability do I have here in the vendor marketplace? It's a little crazy, you know? You know, that makes me nervous at the end of the day, is I'd like something succinctly packaged that we can get this level of functionality back. Then I'd like to enhance it so it's accessible and usable for everybody. And ultimately, like, where we can define survey questions and flow, how many questions, that type of stuff, and maybe a bubble interface, or even give, like, team members opportunity to define some of this in a Discord session. You know, I'm using the new VO translation module on Discord right now, which is great for my bilingual audience and sometimes only single language speakers. You can throw a Spanish flag on a Discord post that automatically translates it there in the Discord channel. It's pretty awesome. So to bring that kind of functionality to our text message broadcasting and such would be a neat integration if we cross the line with, you know, cross the gap with Discord or something.
Is there no package solutions already that exist for this, or is it just they're too pricey for you guys?
I kind of both. So, you know, too much stuff requires still add-on programmatic connection. Doing like survey, you know, multi-step survey over SMS. Back when we built the stack, I could not find it. There were some, like, basic things out there, but you couldn't do very much sophistication or customize them very heavily. And, like, we need to branch, you know, well, tell me if you're Spanish speaking or English speaking. Then I need branching logic there to give you the rest of the script in Spanish, right?
Right.
You know, there's some functionality you need here in doing community work that's just not out there. You know, we're too often building this on for the campaign trail where you're just doing, oh yeah, this is my list. That's all English speakers. I know this out the gate, so I'm only working in English. You know, I don't need branching logic. You know, it's mostly oriented toward getting the message across and not getting something interactive back. And And let me remind you, Sean, at the end of the day, you know, going beyond that, you know, into Web3, into DAOs, that's really, you know, I see a tool here that if you could package all this up with all this SMS functionality, you know, I've told you before, the Suku World guys have built the SMS bridge for digital token exchange via SMS and kind of one-way hashes, which was pretty creative thinking for you know, what they had up. And the code base is still out there. They don't have it running anywhere right now. But I can't help thinking about could we create a bridge to Web3? If all this was packaged up so you could do all this cool stuff and you really had these authentic deep connections with your community over SMS because this was the right platform that was performant enough and really optimized and could be rolled out for people. Could you build a DAO off of it? Could you bridge that divide enough that people could actually participate in the DAO via SMS?
Yeah, I guess my immediate thought is this is all plumbing. I guess the most important thing is the experience is compelling. And if you're providing a service that's so critical and important to these people, they're going to put up with some tolerance of learning how to use it. So whatever heartache there is or brain, you know, like, around figuring out how to get your, you know, ETH address over SMS and having to store that somewhere or whatever it is. If it's a compelling use case enough, people will figure it out. Like, I don't think we can discount I think too many times we get so focused on usability and say like, oh, how would you ever deliver this service like this, where you're having, you're sending ETH addresses around over SMS. That sounds like terrible usability. Well, it's like, no, you got to think about the, all things considered, and weighing how important it is. People will put up with some level of like kind of subpar usability if something's important enough. So yeah, I think it's an amazing idea. I'm 100% on board with the DAO concept. I don't know how much you know about us. My technical roadmap for Problematic is public. So I do build in public is a thing. And it's far on the left side. In other words, it's very horizon, but DAO-fying our initiative. So it is truly headless and governed by the people, essentially like a co-op. That is absolutely in the cards for us. I'm a big believer in it. And as well, like spinning out these projects and everything we do now, like when we launch a project, it manages essentially a virtual cap table for all the contributors. So their contributions get logged and you can see who's, you know, delivered what. I can see us at some point spinning out each project as a DAO and really just being like a DAO factory here. A huge believer in it. So yeah.
Yeah, I think there's really cool potential here. So, and I've got, I talked about a whole bunch of abstract stuff, but I've really got, kind of a bit of a checklist on, I think, what the opportunities are to just help package and create a little more efficiency in this product. And that's just, function embedding some things that we do today that are inside the big cumbersome Twilio Studio flow. Kind of thinking about, if we have all kinds of people bringing programmatically accessible SIP trunks and messaging services. Embarrassingly, I'm even using somebody else for a testing service for a testing instance, but I can't remember who. So no shout out to any other providers, just Twilio. But and Twilio has some community impact. You as a nonprofit, you can get like $500 messaging credits and stuff here a year. So that's pretty cool and really a radical cost reduction too. But I have a checklist of like things that I think we need to do immediately reduce some of the cumbersomeness of some elements like Studio Flow. And that's just breaking out some like message routing and broadcast message logic into some functions, taking it out of the Studio Flow. And then that'll give us a platform to think through the modularity of things. Now we package up and deploy. Now I think we have to think real hard about, the back end, the AWS, and what all that looks like for somebody in the future. So, yeah.
Cool. All right. Well, so just to tie this all back in. So we've got a project for you set up on the website. Our listeners know that this is not a traditional podcast in the sense, very much like your operation. It's not a one-way broadcast, but it's really an interactive thing. The idea here is that hopefully people listening get inspired enough to want to work on this, and then they can actually be part of the solution. So we've got a project set up for you guys. It's on problematic.app under the projects marketplace there. People can go there now. It sounds like your primary ask, if I'm reading it right, is assess the current solution that you guys have cobbled together using Lambda, Dynamo, and Twilio Studio, and kind of get our head around, like, how do we take what you've proven with that proof of concept and abstract it into a system, like something, a more productized version that could be easily dealt with by your staff, get some reporting out of it, be more nimble in how you change questions and surveys and whatnot. And then ultimately, if we do our job right, we can maybe open source that and provide this to other people, like such as yourself in other communities. And this could be a real kind of force multiplier for change. Is that all sound accurate?
Yeah. Yep.
Cool. What else? Okay, so let's just wave a magic wand here, say that we did all that and we've delivered that. What else might you want? Like, what do you see from your experience? You've dealt with so many people now in this situation. What else would you build if you could? And it could be, it doesn't have to be an app. It could be like a marketing campaign or, pick anything. But is there anything else you can think of that our members might be able to build to help the cause?
Thinking bigger and outside the box. We are really food makes you pretty busy when you're working in food, and we're really returning to some strategic focus on grassroots fundraising and engagement with the community this year. There's probably some interesting opportunities there that I haven't thought real deeply about. But I was talking to you before the podcast, Sean, that we're starting. One element of this is like virtual marathons and virtual races going on throughout the year, kind of in, run for hunger type stuff. And, you know, we'll have different events to compete for, compete with a family, to compete as an individual, you know, whether it'll be various different flavors throughout the year. It'd be fun to sit down and think about that a bit and grassroots enablement and reach. And I've got an experienced director of events who came from the corporate space. So she brings lots of skills to the table, is a great collaborator. But having some outside perspective and collaboration with that might be a lot of fun in trying to expand the reach of that impact hunger here in our community and just engage people and create good experiences and physical tie-ins and rewards and that kind of thing. So that'd be fun.
Yeah. Cool. I'll throw in a plug for Charity Miles, like we were talking about beforehand. Yep. So I use this little app on my phone, and I'm a runner, so I run every other day. But I just fire this app up, and it's great because you can pick the charity you want to support, and it basically logs your miles in it, and they match. Whoever the sponsor is for your run is actually then, you know, contributing capital to that charity. I run for the Alzheimer's Association. So every run I do, I know that, you know, they're contributing X number of dollars matching those miles. It might be something for you guys to add yourself on there. If you're a nonprofit, I think you can just apply and set yourself up.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm definitely going to check that out after our podcast here, Sean. Cool. And, you know, again, SMS is a big deal for us. We've just put in with a 10-year grant with the National Institutes of Health with ASU, working on nutritional health in our community that could really move the needle on kind of sustainable pathways to improving food security and nutritional health. At the end of the day, you know, communication and data is going to be what success is defined by. So, yeah, big deal to us. So has applications everywhere, but I think it can go on and impact many others too. So, yeah.
Yep. Me too. Jeff, you're doing important work. Where can people find you if they want to go learn more? Should we send them to your website? How do you want people to come into your world?
Yeah. You know, CreightonCommunityFoundation.org is kind of like the outdated place, you know, business card placeholder out there. You see most of our stuff on social media and Facebook and Instagram. So just because our community participates heavily there, so I'd encourage you to check us out there. But you can find those things through our website, which is CreightonCommunityFoundation.org.
Cool.
Yeah.
And we'll link all this. The people listening, we'll link all this in the show notes. If you don't need to write all this down now, but you can refer back to the website, and we'll have all those links there for you.
Yeah. You know, Creighton's a little tricky to spell, so everybody will appreciate that. So.
Well, I actually did, I can't remember if I told you this, but I actually did way back in the day when I was at Brophy, I did my community service at Creighton at the McDowell and 26th location. We worked with the Special Olympics kids there. So
full circle. Yeah, it is. So, yeah, cool. Well, interestingly enough, this year I have high hopes that we'll be able to build a adaptive playground, not an adaptive playground, actually an adaptive food space. So one of these urban agriculture community garden sites at the Larry C. Kennedy campus for wheelchair bound folks in the community, adults and kids. We've got about 3/4 of an acre over there that we are running capital campaigns for, which is going to be a cool space. Let's think about it. If you're a wheelchair, you don't get much option to go out and do gardening stuff. You know, that's considered outside of your wheelhouse, right? So what about an adaptive space that brings you in a wheelchair the therapeutic type interaction with garden spaces and actually empowers you to like run your own garden? And we've got amazing. Cool stuff happening up there too, talking about Special Olympics. You know, that'll be a great historic throwback there to your involvement with the Creighton School over there. So yeah,
Jeff, Phoenix is lucky to have you. You do amazing work. It's been great catching up, and hopefully we can send you some people and we'll see what we can do on this project for you.
Yeah, been a blast talking this morning, Sean. I'm really curious if your folks listen to a full hour of a podcast like this. Thanks for sticking with us if you've listened this long. So we covered a lot of ground. So yeah,
I'm pretty sure my mom is the only one who listens to all these things. So shout out. All right, Jeff, you have a good day, man. Take care.
You too, Sean. Thanks.
All right, that was my interview with Jeff Bowles of the Creighton Community Foundation. Hope you enjoyed it. And I hope you can see why he's just such a neat guy doing such good work. Really excited to get him on the pod. So if that project speaks to you, here's why it's so cool, is it ticks that box in of what constitutes a good project for us, in that we can solve his immediate need, but then we can also just productize what we do for him. And instantly that becomes, you know, we can open source it. You can make a business out of it. Whatever we think could have the most beneficial impact, we can then, you know, take that asset that we make and deploy it elsewhere for other people. So it ticks that box. I'm really excited. I think this is something, this is a good one for us. So if anything there speaks to you and you think you might be able to contribute to that and you want to work with Jeff, head over to problematic.app, find the Creighton Community Foundation on the projects page. We've already got a page up for them, and see what bounties are open. We've got the discovery call set as the first bounty, and there may be more open by the time this airs. But head over there, and at the very least, if you don't see anything there that you can immediately do, but you are interested in the project, we now have this neat capability that I mentioned. You can go, and in the upper right, you can click the watch this project button, and that will then notify you as there's activity on the project down the road. And it, again, it's really cool because it does it on your terms. So if you say, you know, I just want one email a week or one email a month or whatever it is, we'll do a roll up of all the activity that you care about and we'll just send it on your frequency that you want. All right. So other opportunities, like I mentioned before in the intro, we've got two events coming to Lisbon, April 15th and April 22nd. We have our next pair. The Ideathon and the Build-A-Thon. And if you want to be involved with those and you're not in Lisbon, there is the opportunity to be a customer feedback volunteer. You can do that remotely. So that's something that we can always use more people there. It's your opportunity to help shape the projects that are being built that weekend. And that feedback that they get, you know, when you can get immediate feedback from, you know, five or six people and, you know, have a different set of eyes on it and help stop you from building something that wasn't going to be the right thing, that's immensely valuable. So if you think you want to provide that role, you can do that. Just create a profile on the website and apply to be a customer feedback volunteer. The other way you can help us is just helping getting the word out. So I built this cool capability now in your admin portal. If you go in, you'll see a referrals tab. And if you head over to there, hit the generate link, it'll make you a custom referral link. And then it also gives you like just a one click. You hit any of the Twitter, Facebook, and the LinkedIn buttons, and it'll one click publish a message to your profile with your custom referral link. And that anyone who comes through that link will then be attributed to you, whether they sign up on the spot or whether they come back like a month from now. It logs them under your account. And so you'll then be able to see who you originated. And eventually, this doesn't exist yet, but it will. But eventually, it's going to actually it's going to show you the impact that you represent. So it'll show you, you know, you referred this person, they signed up, and they worked on these three projects, which had, you know, XYZ impact. So that's all coming. Really exciting times. Lots of stuff going on right now with the events and the website. So if you've listened this far, thank you for the support of the project. Tell a friend about it if it speaks to you, and see you on the next pod.
You've been listening to the Problematic Podcast. To get involved and propose a project idea of your own, or to join in the discussion around one of the projects proposed during the show, visit problematic.app. That's problem, ATTIC.app. Be sure to subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts and leave a rating and review on your favorite platform. Until next time, be the change.